Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
So I went down to my favorite store, picked out three or four shirts or more, a pair of pants and a striped tie, and the man came by and said, "Yes, sir, cash or charge?" I said, "Just put it on my credit card." Write that dude up. Oh, convenient.
This is another edition of On Your Money. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy Cardine is off this week, and so is Kevin McKinley. To my knowledge, they are in separate places together. But we're still taking your questions about personal finance and especially your questions on managing credit cards and credit card debt. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at onyourmoney@wpr.org or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This week, Erica Sandberg joins us. She's editor-at-large and lead columnist for CreditCardGuide.com and a columnist and reporter for CreditCards.com. She's also the author of Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for New and Growing Families. Her website is ericasandberg.com. Erica, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's so great to join you and talk about money.
Well, first, you have 8 savvy habits of high-volume credit card users, people who charge massive sums to their credit cards and pay it off. Before we get into some of your 8 tips, can you explain for us who would want to do this in the first place and why?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, credit cards, they promote this reaction among people. You know, a lot of people do tend to overuse them and get to crazy debt. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really unpleasant when that happens. But it's very much like, and I hate to be glib, but it's very much like using a tool wrong. You know, you can pick up a hammer and you could use it to create a house, or you could pick up a hammer and you can use it to smash your toe in. So it really depends on how you use it. And so that's where this story came from, which is, look, you know, you don't, No one's putting a gun to your head and say, you know, you have to get into credit card balances that you can't pay off. Here's how some did it.
So, your tip number one, we should use software for hard numbers. Explain that.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, Cynthia, is I'm kind of a Luddite. I like pen and paper, and, you know, I tend to be very, like, I keep numbers in my head. But one thing that I found over and over again with people who use credit cards well is that they track everything. I mean, they are big trackers. They need to know how much money is coming in and going out and, you know, what they're spending every month on coffee. I mean, this is what they do. And in order to do that, tracking software really has been named as instrumental in keeping spending in check. And if you keep your spending in check, that means you're going to keep your credit in check too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, use tracking software. A lot of people love Mint.com. There's so many right now. I mean, there's just, if you go on and do a search for personal finance tracking software, you'll find so many different programs. So just find one that's good for you.
Should we be at all concerned about sharing our bank account information with some your website?
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other subject. You definitely want to go with one that's credible. It's been around for a while. I mean, I think Mint started in mid-90s, back in the very beginning of this whole thing. You know, I wouldn't go with a total startup, and there are many, trust me. You know, something that's still in beta. You know, go for one that's been around. Quicken, my gosh, you know, Quicken has been around since the beginning of time, so you can certainly find programs that are going to be very, very safe.
Number two is earn from charging.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that was a gulp of coffee. It's early for me. Yeah, credit cards, you know, certainly most of the good ones, and I mean good ones as in cards that are really for people who have demonstrated great use, they're going to give you, they will give you rewards, whether it's cash back, whether it's points redeemable for travel. I mean, people know this, but really it's time to start grabbing it. Because if you do stay out of debt, then you're guaranteed you're going to earn money. And most of the people who I interviewed for this particular story love the cash back rewards because it just makes sense. You know, if you spend $2,000, you may get $200 back. So it just totally depends on what the program is. But hey, you know, every dollar counts.
Are you saying that we should, what kind of purchases should we be putting on our credit card? Are we paying off our monthly bills with the credit card, or are we using it for groceries or for those one-off times to go to the department store and pick up a new sweater?
Well, okay, look, here's a really great way of doing it. All right, let's just say that you are a cash-based person, right? Everything that you do, everything that you buy, whether it's your household charges, household expenses, or your clothes for your kids, it just comes out of your checking account. That's what you do, right? If you do that, will you get into debt? No, it's not possible. Mm-hmm. So instead, choose one or two charges or one or two expenses. Use your credit card to purchase them, and then just pay it off as you would in the same thing. You know, it's cash. It's the same thing. So whether you use your debit card or your charge card, psychologically speaking, it's the same thing if you pay it off at the end of the month. But what you do is, if you do that and you have a great rewards card, you'll earn money from all of your purchases. So let's just say it is your grocery bill. Every month you spend $500. That's what you do. You pay it off in full, and as you're doing that, you're racking up rewards points that are translatable into cash or travel or, you know, gas, whatever it is that you want.
You also want us to prepare for the inevitable. What are you talking about there, and how do we prepare?
You know, this is an interesting one, and this is where I think I get a lot of people, and I hate the word consumer, a lot of people say, what do you mean prepare for the inevitable? I'm paycheck to paycheck over here. I'm you know, freaking out about money. It's very hard. You know, I go to the grocery store and I've got to really be careful with every purchase. Well, you still have to. Preparing for the inevitable means there are expenses that live outside your normal means, and everybody has them, whether it's new tires for the car or you have a cat and the cat needs an operation. These are things that they're just the unexpected, but let's face it, they're the expected. So everybody should have something going into savings accounts. Because you're going to be paying for them. Where are you going to get the money from? So, you know, at least have a little extra in your checking account. You've got to spend under your means, not to your means. And over and over and over again, the people who I've interviewed, whether it's experts or just, you know, people like you and me, they said, you can do it. You can do it. You've just got to change your mindset.
Mm-hmm. And your priorities, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, stay out of the big box stores where you're overly tempted to buy these, you know, huge quantities of things that aren't even necessary. If you're an online shopper, you know, just be really careful. Just think need first, and then everything else comes second to savings.
Mm-hmm. Hold continuous credit conversations. Who should we be talking to about our credit?
I sensed a little laugh there.
How much is your debt? I'll tell you my debt if you tell me your debt. No.
No, that's really about your partner. It's so hard. You know, you're doing it yourself, and maybe you're managing your credit perfectly, and you're spending the way you are supposed to. But the person that you're attached to has a completely different set of priorities and is a totally different way of going about managing their finances. Personally, I think that's one of the hardest things to manage, which is the other person's finances, because you can't control another person. So what do? You're going to have to at least have a meeting of the minds. Never feel afraid to talk to the person that you're with about their money. You shouldn't. I mean, if you start to have like heart palpitations, like, oh my God, I don't want to open up the credit card, or, you know, this makes me nervous, that's a bad sign. Mm-hmm. Consider that a bad sign. So to reject it, you know, and this is what, you know, my wonderful people in the story did, is look, we're just going to talk about it all the time. Hey, what did you spend this month? Did you get your nails done? How much was that? Make it an open and continuous conversation, and it's not, then it won't be stressful. But if you wait and if you just never do it, you know, you don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst thing, because whatever state you're in, whether it's community property or not, you may be responsible for this person's purchases.
And we'll get to the remaining tips that you've got, but I wanted to ask you, how many credit cards is too many?
You know, that's funny. That's actually one of the points is, ideally, there is no ideal number. You know, it's kind of what works for you, which sounds so nebulous. I don't want to do that. Start with one. Hey, look, if you can manage one, and one's giving you all the rewards that you want, and you've got enough borrowing power to do all the things that you need and stay out of debt, fantastic. The problem with just one is that if you are looking to build your credit, maybe you want to buy a home, right, and you want a really great credit score, one may not be enough to do it. Because when it comes to credit cards, if you can manage a couple, that's ideal in the spectrum of credit scoring, because they want to see that you can do a couple. That's, you know, it's, you don't want to be a one-trick pony. But if it's just you and your card, by all means, just do one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm. Is it, how do we open that first one if we don't already have an established credit history? Is it hard to get that first credit card?
It can be, but most of the times it's not. And the reason it can be is if you're a young, maybe you're a college student, and you're not even 21 yet. Yeah, it's a little hard. credit card regulation is tighter now than it had been before. There was the CARD Act that came through in 2008 and really came into being in 2009. And it prohibited just random credit card applications from being accepted. You have to prove that you can pay down the debt that you'll incur with that credit card. So young people are definitely having a harder time now. However, if you have a job and you can prove that you've got income, or you have somebody who can co-sign, or maybe you could just jump on somebody else's as an authorized user, you can get started. But the best way, Cynthia, is to get a secured credit card. I love secured credit cards. All that is that it's just going to a bank or a credit union or a credit issuer, applying for one of their cards, that you put a small amount of money down, a couple hundred dollars, and that will act as your the base of your credit line. And sometimes you can even have more. So if it's like $200, you can have a credit line of $500. That money that you put down is the security. The bank is happy. You're happy. If anything goes wrong, they can take the funds in the bank. It's a very secure product. And it helps people. So it's, you know, if you want to get your foot in the door, that's the way. And it's, you don't need anybody else's help that way.
You recently answered an online question you heard from someone who wanted to boost their 780 credit score, which is already considered excellent. What's the difference between a 780 and a perfect 850? And what effect does it have?
People crack me up about scores. Oh my goodness, the score obsession. Each point is like fretted upon. Oh, I want people to stop. I truly do. A credit score, credit scores, all it does, these credit scoring companies, FICO is the most common one. It just takes the financial information from your credit report, weighs some information heavier than others, and then shoots out a score, uses a mathematical model. And that score is for lenders, other businesses, to quickly gauge risk. So if it's very low, and they range, FICO scores range from 300 to 850, so if it's like 300 or 400, 500, that means you're a risky customer. Something's gone wrong. You haven't paid your bills, maybe you even haven't used much credit, that makes you a risky customer. And of course, you're going to stress out about that if you want to borrow money at the best rate. But when you use it and you pay off your bills regularly every month, your credit score is going to rise because it's just natural. When it reaches a certain point, 750 and above, you are considered excellent. At that stage, you can go, I'm doing everything right. I'm paying off my bills. I'm using credit. I'm borrowing perfectly. La, la, la. Everything's great. Relax. Be happy. You don't have to reach the very top. A new lender is going to look at you and say, you're doing great. Mm-hmm. They're not going to fret about every single point, and you shouldn't either.
We're talking with Erica Sandberg, a personal finance expert and editor-at-large and lead columnist for CreditCardGuide.com. She's also the author of Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for New and Growing Families. And this is On Your Money. We're taking your calls and your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is onyourmoney@wpr.org. Do you have a question about raising your credit score? Are you looking for advice on paying off credit cards or opening a credit card? Maybe you're seeking tips on how to get by on a very limited income. Erica is here to answer your questions this hour on Your Money. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is On Your Money. We are talking with Erica Sandberg, a personal finance expert and columnist. She's also the author of Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for New and Growing Families. We want to hear from you as well with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is onyourmoney@wpr.org, or you can also reach us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Erica, we heard from Rit on Facebook. They say, here's a tip we use. If you have to use a credit card, note the amount you spent in your checkbook and highlight it in a special color. Balance as if these were checks that you have written. When it's time to pay your credit card bill, tally up all your highlighted expenditures, put that amount as a deposit, then write a check for that amount. This way, you are using actual money you have, and you are less tempted to use it against your future. What do you think of that?
I think Rich is his name, right?
Rit. R-I-T-T.
Rit?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You got it. That's exactly what people who use credit card to their advantage do, and that's what you're doing. You get a crown. That's exactly right. And but the problem is, not the problem, but you have to be organized. And it takes dedication. It takes time. It takes stopping and writing in that number. And it takes doing it. And so it doesn't happen automatically. So if you want to turn things around and change the way you're behaving with credit and money, that's the way to do it. But it does take a conscious effort. So good for you, Rit.
Tom in Watersmeet, Michigan is next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I have a question for you that was a wake-up call for me. I use credit cards all my life, but I've never paid a penny interest because I pay the credit card off when the bill comes due. And it's a great way to analyze what I'm spending and where. But my question to you is, have you budgeted what it costs to have credit cards?
What do you mean what it costs, Tom?
In interest payments.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you pay every dime and you don't have an annual fee, it's free.
It's true.
Right? So, that's the beauty of it. You're borrowing money from banks and credit issuers.
Well, you're also paying on the unpaid balance.
Well, if you roll over the unpaid balance, yeah, and the interest rates can be astronomical. Even now, I mean, there was actually a limit, but you're looking at 20, 29, sometimes in the 30s percent interest on credit card balances that people keep and carry over. It's horrific. Of course, there are worse. There are worse interest rates out there, like, payday loans and car title loans and that type of thing. And compared to those, yeah, credit cards are a bargain. But if you pay everything off by the time, by the due date, you're fine. You're not paying anything in interest. And one of the great methods that I talked to somebody for this particular story was that he and his partner paid off their credit card's bill every week. So every week they would call the credit card company or jump online, see what their balance is, and then send that money. You could do it anytime you want. You don't have to wait for the due date. Hmm. Guaranteed, no interest paid, none, zero, zip.
Well, I suppose it might change our spending habits if we thought about, if I can't pay this off in one payment, how much does this $20 pair of pants cost me after I've taken into account the interest?
It's the anti-sale. I always think about it that way. Like if you go to a department store and you're shopping around and you go to the sale rack and you're like, oh my God, it's 20% off or 50% off. That's a sale. Now, like, re-picture it and you're going to a department store and it says 20% more, 30% more. Would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So re-envision what it means to pay interest, because that's what it is. You know, put that sign up above the item that you want.
This is On Your Money. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine, and we're talking with Erica Sandberg, author of Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for New and Growing Families. She's also a personal finance expert and editor-at-large and lead columnist for CreditCardGuide.com. What questions do you have about credit cards and paying down your credit card debt, earning credit, and increasing your credit score? Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is onyourmoney@wpr.org. Erica, you say you still get a lot of people asking about the Target security breach from December. So let's talk about that. Is it still safe to use a credit card at Target?
Yes. However, for the first time, I think I'm going to be issuing this kind of broad warning, which is this is the new normal as far as credit card safety, and not just credit cards, but debit cards, you know, any of your bank cards. There's a lot of hacking going on, and it wasn't just Target. It was many, many different retailers. It's the hotel industry. It's hitting everything and everyone and everywhere. Be careful. This, if you do have a card, a credit card or a debit card, could be a retail card, check your statements exceptionally carefully from this point forward, because it is definitely a possibility that the store that you used it at, where you used it, could have been hacked. And that means that charges could be made in your name, or new accounts could be opened in your name, and you want to catch them as soon as possible. So I would say, everybody, anywhere, if you've got plastic, this is the time from this point forward to be extremely careful. Mm-hmm. And it is up to us, because what you can do, you don't even have to use plastic. Let's face it, if you want to completely remove yourself from any harm, any danger with your credit card, with your credit report and credit scores, fine, don't use plastic. But otherwise, the danger is there.
Well, what if our statement didn't indicate any fraudulent activity after that initial breach, using Target as an example? Mm-hmm. Should we still keep our eye on the statement, or
yes,
does that mean we are in the clear, that we
no,
weren't a victim
not in
this
the clear.
Time?
We are not in the clear. We are not in the clear. If you have used your credit cards anywhere, at any time, when I say you're not in the clear, as in there's always a possibility that criminals have been able to access your information, because we don't know. I mean, the Secret Service is on this. The authorities are checking into it, but that doesn't mean that we as Americans know exactly who was hit, where, and how. So I'm just saying is that even if you haven't received notice, just be aware that there may be problems that you haven't heard of yet. And it sounds like a horrible warning, but it's not. It's just something to think of, like, okay, this could happen. I'm going to check my statements. Mm-hmm. And if I see anything amiss, I'm going to report it immediately, so I'm not responsible for it. And it's as simple as that. Assume. And it sounds so negative, but I don't want it to be negative. Assume that something could have happened. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to do. Whether you shopped at Target during that key time, or it could have been other stores too. It was Neiman Marcus that was hit. Certainly if you stayed in a certain hotel chain, just assume the worst and expect the best, and do what you can to make sure that you're not in harm's way.
Sure. Is it any more or less safe to use your credit card online from a secure computer at home versus at the store itself?
Well, it was interesting. The Target data breach did happen at point of sale. So this was for people who use their card at the physical store, which was really interesting because people do kind of think, oh my gosh, I'm going to put my credit card into the, I'm going to do online shopping, and that seems really scary. But hey, that happened at the stores themselves. As long as you shop on a secure website, you should be fine. And that does sound a little wishy-washy. You should be fine. Well, you should be fine. But there's always a possibility. Thieves are very, very good at what they do. So, but on the upside of all of this is that America has excellent consumer protection laws. Truly. I mean, we are very, very good with this, which means that if you are hit, if you do have an account that was opened in your name or someone's using your credit card, you're not responsible for those charges. You just aren't. Mm-hmm. You just aren't, because federal law steps in and says you're not. As long as you report the information or the crime within 60 days of seeing it on your statement, you're in the clear. You don't get charged for it. You know who does? The banks. And they're getting hit with it.
Any other notes?
Absorbing all those costs, not you.
Any other notes about credit card security before we go back to the phones?
it's just this is the time to be aware. From now till forever, be aware.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Diane in Eagle River. Hi, Diane.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure. What's your question?
The question is, which cards pay the best rewards and how do you find them? Thank you.
Hi, Diane. Yeah, there's so many great cards. It's kind of like going into the supermarket and going into the produce department. You're like, oh my God, there's bananas and there's so many, and it can be hard to choose. I'll start with the worst way to shop for a credit card, and then I'll work on to the best. The worst way is to wait for a credit card offer to come in the mail, because really, what that is that you're getting the tip of the iceberg, right? It's a very passive way of shopping for credit cards, and yet that's how a lot of people do shop. Like, oh my goodness, look what just came to me, that's just one of countless. So, do go on to a site like creditcardguide.com or creditcards.com, and you'll see right there. You can check the different offers, and one of the categories is rewards cards. So if you're looking for rewards cards, go straight to that, and then you can look all the different offers that are there, and you could compare and contrast, like, oh my goodness, this is perfect because I happen to do a lot of driving and I want a gas card, where I can redeem my points for a better rate on gas or free gas. Great, go for that one. But if you don't do a lot of driving, who cares? So look for the one that really works for you. That's the best way. But before you reach that point, know what kind of credit customer you are. That means checking your FICO score, because you're going to want to know that you're eligible for those cards. Most of the rewards cards are really geared to people with good credit. Mm-hmm. So check it out first. Don't randomly apply for cards that are, that may not even be right for you. You may not even qualify for them. So do at least take a look at your FICO score. If it's good, if it's in that 700 and above range, fabulous. You're probably going to be eligible for one of these great rewards cards, and then just choose among those. Personally, I like cashback rewards as well, but I really love to travel. So, I love Virgin American Airlines. I happen to have a Virgin American Airlines affiliated card because I rack up points that way. So it has to work for you. So whatever it is that you like to do, you'll probably find it on that site.
Aaron in Eagle River is next. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. I would like to the guest to address the cost of businesses, to businesses, of handling credit cards, and more specifically, it seemed to me, running a small business, that the more benefits that the cards give back to the customers, the higher cost that it has to the businesses, especially on small purchases. We generally ran about a 3% charge on all our businesses, or all our handling of credit cards. And I felt that that drives the cost of products, whether it's gasoline or going out to a restaurant or buying your groceries. It forces the businesses to raise their cost to cover the cost that it incurs to them on handling credit cards.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right. It does. It does. And I see it in action. I happen to be in San Francisco. We take a lot of cabs here. And I've seen the look on cab drivers' faces when you hand over the credit card. Because who gets hit with those charges? The cab driver does. And they're not making a lot of money. And it does impact their bottom line in a significant way. And it's the cost of doing business. It's a regrettable cost of doing business.
We're talking with Erica Sandberg. She's a personal finance expert. She's filling in for Kevin McKinley this week in this week's edition of On Your Money. We're taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is onyourmoney@wpr.org. And you can also ask your question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to On Your Money. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Erica Sandberg. She's in for Kevin McKinley. She's a personal finance expert and author of Expecting Money, The Essential Financial Plan for New and Growing Families. She's a lead columnist and editor-at-large at creditcardguide.com. Erica, the economy is far from stellar, and a lot of people are out of work trying to make ends meet, and each person's situation is probably a little bit different. But what advice do you have for people who are worried that they're not going to make it? They've got credit card debt, perhaps, and are expecting to have to pay taxes here at the end of the tax year.
Well, if you don't have tax debt yet, don't incur it now, because this is not the time to start borrowing. Never, ever, ever. I mean, make it a point. If you cannot make ends meet, there you have no, don't lean on credit cards. They will hurt you. They will not help you. Get it out of your head that, you know, that's going to be a stopgap measure. Don't do it. So that's the first step. If you're already in debt and your finances are precarious, you got to start making priorities. What comes first? Is it your housing? Is it your food? Is it your children's need? Or is it the credit cards? No, it's the first grouping. And a lot of people, and it's normal and natural to get kind of flummoxed, like, I don't know who to pay first, you know, during these times, and it's scary. But prioritize. You know, remember, your safety and your immediate needs are always more important than your credit card balances. So really get a good budget together. Figure out how much, you know, who needs what, when, and start parceling it out. You know, if you need to contact the credit card companies and say, look, I don't have a payment this month. How can you help me? I'm desperate. You know, I'm doing my best. They just want to get paid. That's all they want. Just like any bar, just like any lender. It's like you, like us. If somebody borrowed money from us, and they hit, you know, they hit hard times, if they came to us and said, "I'm having a hard time. I'm doing my best," you would appreciate it. Same with them. You know, even though, you know, it's not going to be the same experience, but it takes communication. And if all else fails, go to a credit card, a credit counseling company. They could probably act as an intermediary and help you with that. And at the very, very bottom of all of this,
the great thing about America, we've got good bankruptcy laws. So if you really can't pay and there's, you know, the writing is on the wall, there's just no way you can get the money to them, you know, you can certainly take advantage of those types of legal protections.
Mm. Let's talk to Heather in Madison. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've got a question about taking out another credit card. I don't have any debt other than student loans. I have two credit cards, one I've had with a retailer for about 5 years, one with my credit union for about 10, and I'm interested in taking out a third card for travel perks and benefits. And I was wondering, I know you said that there's no perfect number for credit cards, but how do I try to figure out what mine is?
Well, I think you're there. I think you're there. You know, look at you. You know, you've got a loan. You've got a couple credit cards. You know, if you want to add another one to it, you know, as kind of frosting on the cake, go for it. You know, that's perfectly fine. I mean, if you can manage it, it's, you know, not at the end of the month, you're thinking, oh, my God, what did I spend on this and what did I spend on that? Go for it. That's totally fine. And I love the idea of a good travel rewards cards for you. And there are so many. I could point you in the right direction. Certainly, Amex is a wonderful travel rewards product or company. That's their main thing that they do is travel. They're very good for it. Most high volume travelers use Amex cards.
Mm-hmm. Erica, we were talking earlier about your 8 savvy tips for good credit and. I think we've sort of covered numbers 5 and 6, commit to owing nothing and pay early and pay often. But number 7 is reduce plastic waste. Talk a little bit about that, and is having 3 credit cards going against that rule?
Well, the no perfect number is really important. Plastic waste really means excess, right? You know, if you open up your and I'll challenge everybody who's listening right now. Open up your wallet, see how many credit cards do you have. You know, do you have cards in there that you haven't used in 6 months, in a year, in a couple of years? I bet you do. Right? You certainly may. And then here's another exercise. You know, when you start paying your bills at the end of the month or whenever they're due, is that do you feel overwhelmed? You're like, oh my God, you know, what do I owe in this guy and you know in this particular one, and you know, just feel like it's difficult to manage them all. You have too many. So this is a very personal thing. I mean, waste truly means wasteful to you. You can have 50 cards, and if you can manage them all well and keep all the debt down and everybody's, you know, you've got the spreadsheet where it's like perfect, fine. It's not going to hurt your credit score. There is no magic number for credit scores with the number. So this is more of a personal thing.
What about department store credit cards that are really only exclusively to be used at the store? You want to have one so that you get the whatever 10% off discount, but it's not something that you can use on other purchases. Is it worth it to have that card?
It can be. A lot of them have these you know, special coupons and discounts and all this embedded into the card. If you do shop there often, and that's like your one place, that's your go-to store, it can be worthwhile. But you have to be extra careful to pay off your balances in full at the end of the month. And the reason is that most retailers do charge a higher rate of interest. Almost across the board, it's 21% for a retail card. Mm-hmm. Compare that to a general purpose card, and you're looking at, you know, in the 11 to 15% range. So it's half. If you are going to use your credit card to buy like a large purchase, that you do want to maybe chop into a couple different pieces. Let's just say that you're, you know, buying a whole new suite maybe a laptop and an iPad. You just kind of want to retool your technology, mm-hmm. and it's going to cost $3,000 to do it. You may want to pay over 3 or 4 months, in which case the interest rate is going to be important, and you're going to want to have the lowest rate of interest, and a retail card may not be the best option for that.
John in Wisconsin Rapids, thanks for calling in. John, what's your question?
Hey, thank you. Great program. Really enjoy it. I have
one credit card that I've had for over 25 years. I had it with my ex-wife. I know that if your credit score is affected by one of the things is how long you've had the credit card. We've been divorced for 10 years, but her name is still on it. Is it even possible to get it off?
Hey, John. Yes, but not probable. It depends on there's no law. These aren't like, you know, laws that go into effect. It's the policy of the credit card issuer. In order to even close a jointly held account, you're going to have, in most cases, zero balance. So as long as there's nothing on the credit card, then you can close it. Now, can you transfer it from a conjoined account to a single ownership? Talk to the credit card issuer. They may be able to do it. So it's a maybe. Otherwise, it's not like your history with that card disappears. It stays on your credit report. You're fine. But you may have to open up a new account if you do want to have it just as a single account. But, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. If you've got a good relationship with your ex and you want to keep it, that's fine. If all is working well, there's no reason to close it now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call, John. Gary in Milwaukee has been waiting. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
So I don't know if everyone had heard this before, maybe if you had, but sometimes when you go to a restaurant, you're tipping 20%, or you've got an outstanding server and you're tipping 25%. Sometimes those businesses will pass on the credit card charges to the server and have them pay back whatever the fees would be, like the 3% across the board, just as kind of an FYI when, the cost of doing business is not only for the business, but even those other people that are involved in the business.
Right. Yeah, it's very bothersome to me. I certainly don't think it should be the responsibility of the server. And I use the example of, taxi drivers who are absorbing those costs. I've seen notices in the cabs, that says, look, if you use a credit card, I'm paying more for this. Can you make it up in the tip? It depends on the wording of it. Everyone's got a different way. I respect that. Hey, look, I get it. I think it should be more the responsibility of the company itself who's going to be absorbing those costs and not the hardworking individual. But it's the cost of doing business, and that is the case. You're right.
Erica, a lot of us are getting ready to file our taxes if we haven't already done so, and looking forward perhaps to a tax refund. Some of us might not be looking forward to a tax refund. Perhaps we owe taxes. What do you say to people who might be kind of freaking out about that, and what's your advice?
If there's going to be a tax liability, this is going to sound completely crazy, but your friend is the IRS. Again,
that does sound crazy. Tell me more about that.
I know it sounds like I hear people shrieking. Okay, look, they have programs that are available for you to pay your tax debt over time. They're there. You don't even have to, have a great excuse. All you have to do is fill out the paperwork. If you can't pay, they'll let you pay over time. So, okay, they'll make it easy for you. And there's. Give that a try. If you really don't have the money and there are circumstances that show, that prove that you are not going to have the funds for a very good reason, you can even get a settlement with them. So you can pay pennies on the dollar. So, but you have to contact them and work it out. They do tend to have a very good customer service line, of all things, where you actually get a person on the line who's going to help you. Unlike a lot of other businesses where you have to go through these, crazy prompts where you're pressing buttons everywhere, they tend to answer their phone, and there's a good reason for that, because they tend to want to get paid, and so they're gonna help you.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, say I'm someone who has racked up a bit of debt, and my instinct is to just dump my entire tax refund into it, and even if that means that I have very little left to keep in my savings account afterward, how should we prioritize the way in which we dole out or save our tax refund?
Well, your tax refund is money that you've paid that you've overpaid, right? So in a way, this is your income, right? So you may I love the word prioritize. It's very important. Go through your entire financial picture. I personally think it's perfectly fine to go to a professional and have them help you. Again, if you want free advice, you could certainly go to a credit counseling agency. And they'll help you. They'll take that, whatever your income is, and then they'll take that big maybe tax refund, figure it into the picture, and then look at all of your expenses and then all of your debt, and then figure out what goes where. Fabulous. I mean, if you need help, certainly go get it. But if you can do it on your own, remember, your immediate needs, your necessary expenses, always come first. They come first before your credit card debt. They come first before anything that's extraneous. So, if you need to pay your car loan so that you can get to work, then that comes first. So, though typically people who scream the loudest are those that have the shortest, bluntest teeth. So, credit card companies they do a lot of times they do this. On their when they know that if problems erupt, the consumer can go and file for bankruptcy. So, you know, they're going to try and make it easy for you to pay.
Okay, Denise in Milwaukee, thanks for joining us. Hi, Denise.
Hi.
What's your question?
Yes. Well, my question is, I would like to know if I close out and pay off a few of my credit cards, will it affect my credit score adversely?
That's a question I get a lot. Certainly paying off your cards will affect it positively. Will closing credit cards affect your credit score, though? Great question. The general answer is yes, and in a negative way. And the reason is this, is because in a credit score, the most important thing is your payment history. Do you make your payments on time? If so, that's 35% of your score. Fantastic. The second most important category, however, is credit utilization. If you can keep your balances well below 30% of your available credit line, that's fantastic. You're doing great. And zero is, of course, always best. But 30% is that marker. Okay. So if you close all of your credit lines, what do? You immediately shrink your utilization ratio. It's gone. You don't have it anymore. So that means it's not the closure of the cards. It's the reduction of that ratio. But if you keep no debt, if you still have no balances and you have no credit line, you're still hurting your credit score because you need to continuously borrow and repay in order to build a credit score. So I would at least leave one open so that you can continuously add information to the credit bureaus so that a credit scoring company can come in and score something. Otherwise, you have nothing. You have nothing to score. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like going to school and not taking any classes. Well, you're not going to have a GPA.
Erica, we only have about a minute left. I wanted to be sure that we hit our last point in your 8 savvy tips. Number 8 is respect your personal limit.
Yes. Your finances are yours. They are not your friends. They are not your communities. Fixate on your personal limits. If you know you bring in $2,000 a month net, right, that's the absolute amount that you can spend every month. And that includes savings. You want to put a little extra for savings, too. That's something that you need to concentrate on. Know how much is coming in and never, ever spend more than that. So you can charge as much as you want as long as it's not going to exceed that limit. Ignore what other people are doing. It can be very tempting to look outwards and say, well, they've got this and now I've got that. But it's irrelevant to you. You know, make sure that your finances are ironclad, that they're airtight.
Thanks.
And ignore the rest.
Thanks, Erica, so much for joining us this week.
Pleasure.
Erica Sandberg is a personal finance expert, and she was here for Kevin McKinley. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this hour, Christy Taylor for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster. This is the Ideas Network.